In this episode of Geo Talk, we hear from a geocacher who got more than an FTF. We ask what happened to the maps on geocaching.com and what happened to the GeoMate Junior. All this and more on Geo Talk. Well, welcome to Geo Talk, episode 83 for February 2012. I'm your host, Darren, from the Spin Doctors. And we're just sneaking in before the end of the month. Normally, we come out a little bit earlier. If it's your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. Don't forget our website is geotalkpodcast.com. And there you'll find all the links to various stories that I talk about on the podcast, as well as links to the competition, which we'll mention in a few moments there. You've got a few days left to enter. Before we get into the geocaching news, just a quick plug for ourselves. The Spin Doctors reached our 2000th geocache, which we're very happy about. Just one of us went out. We had planned for the four of us to go out and find an Earth cache up in the Blue Mountains last week, but unfortunately the weather turned against us, and it was quite a few storms up there in the Blue Mountains. So a week later, I headed off with a few friends, thanks to Team WebGuy for organizing it, and Wingnut and Marcus Vitruvius for coming along, and managed to find a geocache that hadn't been found in 4 years. And we made that one my 2000th find. So thank you very much to those guys for coming along. And thank you to all those people who have hidden the 2000 geocaches that I've found over the last nearly 9 years. Well, now into the news. And the first item, as I mentioned in the intro, the geocaching.com maps and Google. Obviously, if you've used the website in the last few weeks, you would have noticed some incremental changes followed by a fairly major change on the map page of with Google Maps basically disappearing almost completely from the geocaching.com website. I'll give you a link in the show notes to a blog post on Groundspeak's blog about exactly what the reasons for that change are. But in a very short space of time, it's essentially Google are now charging big users of their Google Maps API for the use of those. And they claim that it'll only be about 0.35% of the users of that API that will be charged. And according to Groundspeak, they're one of that 0.35%. So to avoid getting hit with a fairly large bill for the use of those Google Maps on their website, they've transferred across to MapQuest and the OpenStreetMap maps. Now, personally, I think that's great. I've been a contributor to OpenStreetMap now for about 6 years, on and off, uploading tracks and adding roads and tracks and so forth. So it's good to see that they're being used even more in more widestream applications. Of course, for some people, it's not so great. First of all, the satellite imagery, particularly for large parts of Australia, have pretty much disappeared. And it also means in some parts of the country, and probably in New Zealand as well, the maps aren't quite as good as what they were on Google Maps. But anyway, check out the link on the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com to Groundspeak's blog post about the Google Maps. Now, you may not be aware that GeoTalk has a YouTube channel where we upload videos every now and again, not on a regular basis. We used to a while ago, but in the last day or two, I've uploaded a video that I recorded entirely on the Magellan Explorer 610, just to give you a bit of an idea of how the unit, what the video quality is like. I found the video is not too bad. It's a bit like some of those early generation cameras, some of the early phones, smartphones or early versions of them that had cameras in them. The sound is fairly lacking on the device, but look, check it out for yourself. You can see what it's like. It's in no way indicative of the rest of the unit, and I'll write a review in the next week or two about the Magellan Explorer 610, but head to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/geotalk. Now, one other GPS device that I was planning to write a review of that I had rave reviews of, really, was the GeoMate Junior by Apposphere. And you may recall a few years back, I spoke to one of the developers of that unit, Warren, who helped put the unit together. And I suppose at the time it was made, it was filling in a fairly niche market, and that is a low-end GPS built for kids at a fairly low price, because at the time the bottom end of GPSs was still around the $200 mark. But this GPS, I think, came in at around about sort of, you know, $89-$90 US at the time. Now, apparently the story is, if you head over to the GM8 Junior website, you'll see that there's very little information. But according to some of the Facebook pages that have been associated with the GM8 Junior, it seems that another company bought out Atmosphere sometime last year and decided towards the end of last year that they would no longer continue the support and sales of the GM8 Junior and just focus on the other part of the business that they had purchased. So unfortunately, that means that the GM8 Junior is no longer being sold or supported, although there is a temporary website that's been set up by the company in which people can still update their pocket queries. And I've actually put up a blog post as well on my blog, which I'll give you a link to in the show notes, where you can use GSAC or just a pocket query from GroundSpeak or even from GCA if you use that website. And then you can upload those caches with their coordinates into your GM8 Junior. So if you have a GM8 Junior and you've not sure what to do, head over to the link that I've got in the show notes, and you can find out both how you can still use it on the GM8 Junior website and how you can use it with GSAC. Less than a month till the Oz Mega event in Albury Wodonga, which will be on the Easter long weekend. I've got my registration all taken care of, and I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to get down there and see how it compares to the Wagga event. One can't help but compare the two, I suppose. So if you don't have the GC code for that, that's GC2Q4JF. Now, according to the website, the registration, the early bird registration has now closed. If you now register, I think there's a slightly higher fee. It also means that you won't be guaranteed of a Geo coin at the event. But look, if you're still making up your mind, get in there now, put in your registration, and arrange to head down to the mega event, which will be occurring on the 5th to the 9th of April. And there'll be a number of other events that are associated with it, including a flash mob, which will be occurring on the Sunday, and a number of GCA events that will also be attached to it. So check that out. I'll give you a link in the show notes, but it's GC2Q4JF. And time is also ticking on our 101 Geo competition. Thanks again to Alan for helping put this together. You've got until the end of the month, so Wednesday the 29th of February, just a few days left. You'd be mad not to enter this competition, really, because the prizes are really good. It's a $200 voucher for the 101 Geo store, second prize $50 voucher, and third prize a $25 voucher. And it's fairly simple. All you have to do, go to facebook.com/101geo. That's facebook.com/101geo, and then or you can head to my website and click on the link there, and you just have to submit your favorite geocaching related photo. So a photo that you've taken while you've been out geocaching, upload it to the Facebook page. And after the 29th, Alan and myself will go through all the entries and we'll decide on a winner. And once again, as I mentioned, first prize, $200 voucher. There's a lot of swag and a lot of geocaching gear you can get for that. So check that out. Well, it's almost time to get into the trivia question for this episode. But before we do, we've got a call from a caller who we hear quite regularly down in Victoria by the name of Covert Hypnosis.
Hello, GeoTalk listeners. It's Covert Hypnosis here. Just a report from down the hospital. I just went for a cache GC3CNCB called Bourbon and Coke, please, in Langline. It had just come out, and I happened to be 5Ks away driving on the road and just pulling the car straight towards the cache and arrived close to it, parked up, saw a guardrail, went to jump across it, and failed in jumping across it, flipped over and cut my right leg open at the shin. I'm just at the hospital at the moment. I reckon about 6 stitches, and I'm going to have an x-ray too because it's quite sore. And literally as I fell over, Kelly Horns was on the pathway on the way up. He saw me and I fell over. He's just laughing now. He's actually here with me. And then a short time after that, the cops arrived because we had the, that stage, the car had been backed into the middle of the road so that I could be loaded into it and could try to search for a first aid kit. And so the cops came to see what all the hoo-ha was about. And shortly after that, Rigger 64 and Dobby Dogs arrived to go for a first to find. At the time when the other teams arrived, we still hadn't put our hands on the case. And I was considering asking Joe to go and grab the cage while I was still laying there on the ground, but I thought it was bad form to ask him to do that. But as soon as the other team arrived, Joe had to track for the cage to make sure he was first to get his hands on it. So that's my report from the field. I'll get back to you after I've been thrown up and had some painkillers and then got over the painkillers. I'm still in the third of pain at the moment. But yeah, so that's my fun and games and my first major geocaching injury. Speak to you later.
Well, thanks for calling that in, Covert. I think you've just reminded me why I don't like going caching at night, and in particular FTF hunts. But hopefully we'll hear back from you, I think, a little bit later on in the show, find out how you're going. Well, it's now time now for the trivia question for this episode, and that is, which state has the most number of geocaches? Fairly simple. Which state has the most number of geocaches? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, it's time now to have a look at some of the events that are occurring around the country. And obviously, if you're listening to this a day or two after it's come out, you're probably heading or know of one of the leap year events that'll be occurring on the 29th of February. Hopefully, you'll get to one of those or you'll find a geocache on the 29th of February because for most people, this is the first time that they've had a chance to fill in that date on the geocaching calendar. I was very fortunate. I think I found two or three on the 29th of February back in 2004. Anyway, here's some of the events that are occurring in March. On the 3rd of March is Stanthorpe's big weekend event. That's up in Queensland. And on the 4th of March, for Clean Up Australia Day, there's two CETOs occurring in Sydney. Pick up for the penguins over at North Head and Clean Up the Blue Mountains heading up at Wentworth Falls. Well, that's it for the events around the country. Fairly short list. If you've got one that you want to promote on the podcast, just drop us an email, geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Well, it's time to open the GeoTalk mailbag, and we've got a few emails that have come in. The first one comes from Claire Jarvis, also known as Claire 007. She writes, "I'm a recent geocacher and started in early September 2011. Great time of the year. I presume that's probably because the weather's getting better in September. She says, I'm a post-crossing member. I send postcards to random people around the world. And I had a member from the United States who said that her favourite pastime was to go geocaching with her daughter in the local area. She says, I had never heard of geocaching and sought to look it up on the internet. And the concept of it grew in my mind. The idea of hunting for something that only a select group of people know about was a great idea. And I love being outdoors. Much to my delight, my new phone has a GPS device installed, and I have to admit I got a bit carried away and started going through the local list systematically, but wondered why I was having trouble finding micros. Anyway, I've now stuck to the easiest as possible, that is traditional caches, and haven't gone any higher than a 2 for difficulty or terrain. I'm also very lucky in the fact that I live in the Adelaide Hills in South Australia. We have some great bush sites and have completed one multi-cache. The first was unsuccessful due to the cache being missing. Looking forward to placing my first cache, but I have to wait until summer semester is finished at uni and I have a bit more free time. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks very much, Claire. That's from Claire 007 up in the Adelaide Hills. And Claire might be interested to know you're not the only post-crossing member who's also a geocacher. Mundu down on Homarsh Island, featured in a story that appeared on ABC News Online. I'll put a link in the show notes. You can find out about Mundu's passion for geocaching. Well, more for post-crossing anyway. And we've got another email from Dwayne, also known as Hoosier Guy, over in the US. He wanted to pass on a story about his older brother, whose wife asked him for a divorce out of the blue. And he thought everything in their marriage was fine, and the divorce kind of hit him hard. He shut us all out and was getting very depressed. He says, while I wasn't able to get him to talk about what he was feeling, I did get him to join in on a camping trip so he could experience my geocaching hobby. We had a lot of fun together, and he really enjoyed geocaching. Between the fun we had chasing caches and some prayer support from friends, he opened up and we had some great talks. He's still hurting, but isn't afraid to talk anymore. He's even got his own GPS receiver and is making new geocaching friends up home. Yeah, geocaching is a great hobby, but sometimes it can be a path to so much more. Well, thanks for that story, Dwayne. That's a great touching story, and certainly shows that geocaching is not just all about the numbers. Sometimes it's about helping people, and whether they're family or friends. So thanks very much for that email. We've got a few calls that came in. The first one's from Fluffy Fish over in Perth.
Hi, GeoTalk listeners. This is Fluffy Fish calling in from Perth today. A beautiful day here in Perth. It's not too hot and very sunny. Just calling in my milestone for my 500th cache. I just found a frog from the Geocaching Australia website called I'm Ahead. It's a cute little thing. And, yep, and this one is my 500th. So I've been caching for 3 years, slow going, but finding time with the family is always fun. But it's a great hobby, met lots of cool people, and been lots of great spots. Okay, thanks. Happy caching.
Thanks for that, Fluffy Fish, and congratulations on the milestone. And now we've got an FTF from Noikmeister down in the ACT.
Yeah, g'day, Darren. It's Noikmeister from Canberra here. Just wanted to ring through with a minor milestone. I was listening to the GeoTalk podcast for January 2012 the other day, and noticed on the way home there was a couple of caches that had been published and still not found yet. Not sure where all the usual suspects were, but so I thought I'd try and pick one up on the way home. Got that one, and then went and picked up my son and went out and picked up another one. And so that makes 7 months in a row with the first to find for me. So that was a new streak. My previous best had been 6 months in a row with the first to find. And really appreciate what you're doing, GeoTalk. Keep up the good work, mate. Bye.
Congratulations on that one, Noikmeister. And now we catch up with someone that we missed last episode. He didn't call back. Splatum down in Victoria.
G'day, it's Splatum calling from Melbourne. Firstly, I'd like to apologise for leaving you hanging the other night. I hope you didn't lose too much sleep in the last episode. With regards to worrying about my predicament, we had some more success there, but I trusted COVID to chase you up on it, and he got busy with work, and that's the end of the story. So I'll let him call you back. But in the meantime, we've just been out, COVID and myself, and a German guy who's just in town on work. His name is Carrie Flagg. And he's in town from Berlin on work, as I said. And we had a good night. We chased two caches by the Box Hunters, and they were out near the airport in Melbourne. The first one we visited was called Down by the River, and that was a small. And the second one we visited was a micro, and the cords were out a little bit, but we still managed. That one was called Barn Madness. And, yeah, we had a great night. We I think they were published at about 10 past 9, and we got on the phone to Carrie Flagg, and he was busy working. And we managed to meet up with him in the city and pick him up and take him out there, and we still managed to first to find some 1.5 hours after it was published. We had a good time. We've watched a few YouTube videos, and we share a common interest in photography, and he told us about some fantastic caches in Germany. Apparently, they're allowed to put them in abandoned structures, and they're allowed to put them in drains and that sort of stuff. And so we had a good yak about that. Yeah, it's COVID and Spudum signing out.
And finally, it's probably time to catch up with Covert Hypnosis over in the hospital to see how he's going.
Hello, Dear Talk listeners. Just checking in. I'm currently laying down. I've got Dr. James stitching my leg up and it's hurting a little bit. And I thought I'd do something to take my mind off it. And this is kind of working. So, yeah, I guess, what's the amount of stitches we got so far? We've got charges checking. We've got three so far. Another 50 to go. There's probably another three to go, I guess. We'll see how we go. But anyway, do you talk? Listen, this is what happens when you don't look where you're jumping. We'll speak to you later.
Well, thanks very much, everyone, for those calls. And don't forget, you can call in your own FTF milestone or hospital adventure by giving us a call on 02800 5436, or you can write it in and I'll read it out. geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Well, that's about all for this episode of Geo Talk. Thanks for once again for listening. But before we go, we better give you the answer to the trivia question. And before we give you the answer to that, it looks like Darren, host of the podcast, has made another mistake. Last episode, I got quite a few emails from people saying, "Hey, where was the answer for New South Wales?" Turns out I wasn't reading my list correctly and I read New South Wales as New Zealand, so my apologies for that. And one person who pointed it out to me was Adrian Homburg, also by the name of A. Homburg, who wanted to say that he really enjoyed the podcast, looks forward to it coming out each month, heard the mistake in the January 2012 episode, and just wanted to point it out. He also wanted to know if I could provide a list of those particular trivia answers on the website. Look, Adrian, I will, and what I'm in the middle of doing is having a look at just redesigning the website so I can actually do that. So I might separate the feed, you know, the podcast feed, and then have a sort of separate column for any notes and so forth in there. And it also reminds me that if you haven't already checked it out, there is a Facebook page for GeoTalk. Go to facebook.com/geotalk, and I'll also put the list up on that page as well, so you can add yourself to that. And occasionally also you can send out the odd message through Twitter, so don't forget to check that out at twitter.com/geotalkpodcast. All right, well, that's just about it. Better give you the answer then to the trivia question, and that is how many caches are there, geocaches are there in each state, and which one has the most? In no particular order, and let's see if I can get it right this time. In Western Australia, there's around about 4,250. In Tasmania, 1,500. In South Australia, 6,930. In Queensland, 5,050. In Victoria, 7,170. In the Northern Territory, 570. In New South Wales, 7,340. In the ACT, 1,490. In the Chatham Islands, there's two. In the South Island, 6,322. And the North Island actually takes out the mantle for this particular question with 7,927. Now, sorry about some of the rounded numbers there, but just that the numbers keep fluctuating each day, I thought I'd get them as close to the mark as I could. Well, that's it for this episode. Don't forget to check us out next month for another episode of GeoTalk. And until next time, safe geocaching.
Geotalk listeners, just came out of the hospital. I've been released Been given a pair of crutches to move around on. Been told to keep my bandage on for the next couple of days until it heals up, and just take it off and change it and check it's all nice and clean. So I had an x-ray done too because I was concerned I may have fractured something, but that's going to come back clean. So it's just going to be a really nasty bruise there, about 6 stitches, and then further on from when 6 stitches away, there's a nice gash there too, but not something like that. Just keep any stitches, just got some stair strips over it. And just waiting out from the hospital as Joe goes and brings my car around, which it's an automatic, so I'd just be driving it with my other foot. And yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning, about 3.5 hours since it all happened. Yeah. That's probably me filling out until an eye day. Oh, I also went and smashed the screen of my iPhone severely. Funny story. Early on in the day, around time, it fell out of the seat from the car. I only fell a short distance, about 2 feet, and cracked the lower corner of the iPhone. I said, oh, well, that's a bit silly of me. Quite disappointed in my accident, but I booked myself for an appointment at the Apple Genius Bar at 10:40 tomorrow morning. And as it just happened, I completely smashed the screen. Still usable, believe it or not, but it's barely impossible to read it. I'll send some pictures through it. Bye for now.